each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good Monday afternoon. This is Mary Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and it is my privilege to be sitting in today for Father Anthony, as I do on most Mondays. I hope you are all continuing to keep Father in your thoughts and in your prayers as he struggles with some health challenges. I am so pleased to be joined in studio today by my friends, Chris Cortez. Chris, welcome. And Molly Perry.
Thank you. Thank you so much,
Thanks.
Mary.
Thank
Great
you for
to be
being
here.
We have some... Oh, boy, we're going to have a packed show today because so much happened over the weekend. So much is going to be coming up this month, not just for Respect Life Month, but also, you know, so many people after I do these shows will email me or call me or text me saying, what can I do to get involved? How can I help? I love listening. I love what you talk about, but I give me something practical to do. And I think one of the most important things that we can do as pro-life people, but particularly as pro-life women, is to help other women who are in crisis, who are facing an unplanned pregnancy, and who need our help in many ways in order to carry that child to term and bring a new life into the world. And one of the great organizations that Chris and Molly and I, in full disclosure, have all been involved with for some time and in various ways on the board of directors and in other capacities, is a great pregnancy resource center and maternity home called Aid for Women. And Aid for Women is having its annual, its most important fundraising event, its annual gala coming up on September 25th. And Molly, why don't we start by talking a little bit about the importance of this event? I know that people say, oh, it's a dinner and, you know, there's all sorts of these things, but this is so critical to Aid for Women's mission, this particular event. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, absolutely. Every year we have this dinner. We've been fortunate enough to have some really wonderful speakers, and we give our Presidium Vitae Award every year to...
That means Defender of Life, for those of
right.
you who did not go to a Jesuit high school where you were forced to take Latin for 4 years. See? My mother said it would come in handy, and there you go, because I can go... So our Defender of Life, Presidium Vitae
right.
Award, right.
And that's someone that we recognize as a hero in the pro-life movement. This year, we have a really exciting dinner. Our Defender of Life Award is going to David B. Wright and his wife, Margaret. They've been real heroes in the pro-life
movement.
They have,
and they're sort of not everyday names to people in the pro-life community, but they're these people that if they didn't exist and they hadn't done what they've done, it'd be a very different pro-life movement in the United States. And I love that you found them, Molly, because they're such unsung heroes. I love finding people who have just humbly and quietly done this work for years and years with absolutely no expectation of ever being acknowledged or rewarded for it. So that's what I love about this year's
yeah.
award. Can you talk a little bit about them and what
sure.
they've done and their commitment and their contribution to the pro-life community, which is significant?
So David B. Wright, he's actually a convert to Catholicism. His wife is Catholic, and I think she was instrumental in introducing him to the faith and his conversion. But David B. Wright, along with, you know, a few others, started 40 Days for Life, which is the, you know, praying outside the clinics. And if you've seen Unplanned, you know what that's
right,
all
the
about.
Right, the movie Unplanned, right, which is the life story of Abby Johnson, who was a former Planned Parenthood clinic director, who is now a pro-life activist. And 40 Days for Life plays a tremendous role in her own conversion from being an abortion clinic director to pro-life. And it's not just, so it's there's the prayer component in front of the clinic, but then it's also 40 days, you know, coming from that biblical example of, you know, of 40 days, Jesus spending 40 days in the desert, of prayer and fasting that accompany the people who are praying and who are giving that silent witness.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, praying outside the clinics really does make a difference. The women there, they know that, you know, they see them, they see that they're praying, and, you know, in some cases they'll turn around and not go.
Right. Well, Abby Johnson makes that point in the movie, doesn't she? That when 40 Days for Life, when they began the campaign, there's a significant number of no-shows. It's not just, so you might not, and this is where sometimes like the devil can get you down, right? Where you could be out there praying, you know, all day, and you don't see, as someone who's praying, anybody turn around and leave. And that can be very disheartening. But what Abby Johnson revealed is that might be the case, but their numbers of no-shows were like through the roof. People who either circled and never came in that you would never know. You would never know that those, but that played a significant role, which I just think is so beautiful. It's kind of, again, one of those hidden, you know, little, you know, pieces of love that God gives, right? Affirmations that God gave later. So I'm so grateful for mentioning that, Molly.
And then actually Chris Cortez here, who was instrumental in getting the new Flossmoor Clinic up and running.
So Aid for Women, listeners, for those of you not familiar with all of Aid for Women's centers, we're located, we began in downtown Chicago right near a large abortion clinic on Michigan Avenue, but have now expanded, and through the influence and assistance and vision of my next guest, Chris Cortez, there's a new Planned Parenthood clinic in Flossmoor, Illinois, directly across the street, right next door to a Planned Parenthood clinic there. Have you had the 40 Days for Life people present at that clinic? Has that been?
Yes, this is our third or fourth 40 Days for Life campaign that kicks off, I believe, next week. And we have had a number of conversions happen where girls have actually said, I came in for an abortion today, but seeing someone out there praying has changed my mind, and I was on the fence.
You know, and isn't it something, I know, I remember doing, you know, just talking to post-abortive women, but also talking to women who had made the decision not to have abortions through Aid for Women and other organizations, and the number of women who will say, I asked God to give me just one sign that I should do it or shouldn't do it, and then someone was there with, like, for example, there was one woman I knew, a Hispanic woman, and there was this image of Our Lady of Guadalupe, and she said, I could not walk past that image into go and have an abortion. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't do it.
And so. I can't emphasize enough the power of praying the rosary.
Mm-hmm.
Our Lady will respond. You know, eventually, I really do believe the tide is going to turn.
Yeah.
And the only way that I see that is really going to make a big difference from what we can do from a practical level is to really love the women that are in crisis, that need help, that are desperate, that are afraid, and they feel like this is their only choice, and it's really not. That's what Aid for Women does. They really do lay out what your options are and how we can help you. We have Heather's House. If you have no place to go, you can.
Which is a maternity home for women while they're pregnant and for the first year after their child's born. And then we have a transitional house, Monica's house.
And, you know, one of the criticisms of, you know, the pro-life movement is that we just want these women to have their babies, and then it's over. We're not there for them. But that's really not the truth. Monica's House is a transitional home for women that still need help after they've had their baby. They're not quite on their feet. So Monica's House really is, you know, it's a life-saving option for women when they have nowhere else to go.
And, you know, it's not just a life-saving option in that moment for, you know, the child who is saved and the woman who doesn't go through with the abortion, but in so many ways, women's lives are, you know, they come to us often and there's a lot of dysfunction going on in their personal lives, which is how they wound up in a pregnancy without a husband and without a way to take care of their own child. But in staying with us, you know, we have mandatory classes, we have life skills, you would not believe, you know, I think we had, it was one of our clients, this might be in one of our videos, Molly, for Aid for Women, where she said, literally, when I came to Heather's house, I did not know how to use a can opener. I could not, no one had ever taught me. I mean, life skills that we just absorb from being around our moms in the kitchen and, you know, being part of an intact family, these young women, they've never been taught any of these kind of skills. Again, so, which precipitates often these unplanned pregnancies. And so, you know, we don't leave the woman in the same situation that, that she came to us in.
And yeah, I think these women, they gain confidence. They know that they have support. They're with other women in the same situation. And, you know, one of the women said it becomes kind of like a family.
Right.
And they have that support at Heather's house and Monica's house afterwards.
Right. So it's
after they have their babies.
Right. So it's comprehensive care. And, you know, we've had women stay with us as long as 3 years after they've had their child until they can get back up on their feet, transition into independent living. But our goal with each woman is to meet her where she is and then to transition her to a life of independence and to create a better future for herself and for her child. You know, my favorite story is the young woman who came to us who was from Englewood, who was a young African-American woman, 18, was pregnant by the child of a man who had a common-law wife with five children and came to us and moved into Heather's house and then to Monica's house. And she came to us thinking we were an abortion clinic. She mistakenly, you know, she didn't, you know, read sort of the pro-life fine print, came to us thinking we were an abortion clinic, came to us, stayed with us, had her child. We were able through the Thea Bowman, the Sister Thea Bowman Foundation, to get her a scholarship to a college in Minnesota that also had housing for parenting students, and which was tremendous. So, you know, now she has a beautiful little boy named Christian. She has a college degree. She has a future. And just think, if she'd gone to that abortion clinic, she would have gone right back to Englewood. She'd continued life of poverty, no education. It never occurred to her she would go to college, you know.
Right.
So look at how her entire life has been transformed.
And I think that, you know, many of the women that come to us, you know, we tell them that, you know, we don't provide abortions and we don't refer for abortions.
Right. But we're very upfront about that.
What we want to do is we want them to come in and talk to us because they are afraid. They are in crisis. We want to be able to comfort them and show them that there's another way.
Right.
And I think one of the things that you said, Mary, is how can I help on a practical level? So this 40 Days for Life is a perfect opportunity.
Yeah, for someone who's never done that.
So,
yeah.
And
absolutely,
you're with others, and it's very respectful. It's approaching the women with love and kindness, and I think that is one of the best things you can do.
Yep.
Another way you can help, if you've limited time, is to support organizations like Aid for Women. Please give us donations. We don't charge for any of our services.
That's the thing.
So
yeah, to emphasize that, listeners, that's why this upcoming gala on September 25th is absolutely critical to the mission. You know, even a gift, you know, we'll take anything, $25, $250, $2,500, everything goes right to the women. We don't charge for any services.
Right.
Our staff, you know.
So what I've noticed too is our supporters over the years, it's a very grassroots network of people that have given every year, and those are our loyal donors, and we need, you know, new donors. We need that younger generation to support us, and I have been so encouraged by how many young people are now pro-life.
Right.
That's a really interesting shifting demographic, isn't it?
Which
is so encouraging.
Yep.
So we'd love to get, you know, young professionals, young women, young men that are supportive of saving lives, defending life, to come and support us.
Right. It's such a lovely evening. You and your committee, you know, Chris and Molly, you do such a lovely job. Chris, tell us a little bit about the details of the dinner, where it is, how people can get tickets. And then we'll talk about the keynote speaker because that's going to be a big draw.
Yes, it is Wednesday evening, September 25th at the Union League Club in Chicago. And anyone that would like to go, we have a few more days, I believe. Is that right, Molly?
Yes. Please go online and you can buy your ticket online. We We sold out last year. We had former Governor Mike Huckabee, who is a fabulous speaker. Mm-hmm. I think many people came to see him. But our dinner every year is so inspiring. We'll have a new video this year. Our videos are tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
Go online, watch our videos. You'll be so
impressed.
You can
get information too on volunteering too. No,
yes.
you see our videos and you just, you know, you're reaching for your wallet saying, what can I do? Let me help. But Chris, you're absolutely right. The dinner did sell out last year. So if people want to go and you don't want to miss our keynote speaker, which we'll talk about when we get back after the break here, Uju Ekeocha from Nigeria. She is amazing and is not in the United States all that often. So mm-hmm. this is a rare opportunity to see her in person. And when we get back, we'll talk a little bit more about Uju and her really important work with Culture of Life Africa. And we'll talk a little bit about her book, Target Africa, when we come back. So please don't go away. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750. WNDZ.
This Saturday, January 11th, from 1 to 3 p.m. at Daly Plaza, 50 West Washington Street, Chicago. Work to transform our society from a culture of death to a culture of life. This Saturday, January 11th, starting at 1 at Daly Plaza. Complete information at artschicago.org.
The Winds of Change. On AM 750, WNDZ, and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stan's School is enrolling now for the 2020-21 school year. St. Stan's School is a PK3 to 8th grade Catholic school in Westtown, committed to challenging students achieve academic and social excellence, led by action and example. Explore all that St. Stan's has to offer at ststanschicago.org or call 773-278-4560 or visit St. Stan's School at 1255 North Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway, just one block north of Division on Noble.
I'm Father Thomas Loya, inviting you to join the 2020 Theology of the Body Institute on the ultimate pilgrimage, walking and praying in the footsteps of Jesus. Join myself,
Christopher West,
Father Justin Brady,
Jason Clark,
and the TOB team as we visit Jerusalem, the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, the Via Dolorosa, Bethlehem, and more.
The 2020 TOB Institute's Holy Land Pilgrimage, Saturday, February 15th through Tuesday, February 25th, 2020, with an optional extension to Jordan, February 25th through the 27th. While you're on the 2020 TOB Pilgrimage, you'll have first-class hotel accommodations, air-conditioned tour buses, breakfast, and daily dinner, plus special meals, daily formation with Christopher West and chaplains. For complete information and registration for the 2020 TOB Institute's Holy Land Pilgrimage, visit tobpilgrimages.com. That's tobpilgrimages.com. Or call 1-800-842-4842. Reserve now.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., sitting in, as I do most Mondays, for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And I am joined this hour by my friends Chris Cortez and Molly Perry. And we are discussing Aid for Women, which is a pregnancy center and maternity home. We're discussing the annual benefit dinner, which Molly and Chris are very much involved in putting together and promoting. And to keep the Aid for Women programs going, we need to have fundraisers. And this dinner is really, it's a spectacular event every year. And we have an incredible guest speaker this year because we have Uju Ekeocha from Nigeria. And Molly, why don't you talk a little bit about how she was chosen to be the speaker and a little bit about her and her work?
Well, Mary, you are the first one that mentioned
it was my idea.
Well, she's fantastic. She couldn't be, more appropriate.
Isn't it timely? Isn't God's timing always perfect?
Well, what I love about Uju is she's from Africa and she approaches this in a way that makes so much sense for the U.S., but that mm-hmm. we've forgotten.
Right.
In Africa, women really, they welcome children. They,
it's a family culture.
Right. And it's...
And children are revered.
They don't want abortion.
No.
So they accept children and, you know, they love every child that's brought into this world.
In fact, she was talking about when growing up in Nigeria in her village, there's a special, like, village song for a day that a baby is born. So if there's a baby born in the community, everybody gets together and there's a dance and a song that go along with every baby being born. It's so child-centered in terms of the culture. And if you're a woman and you only have a couple of kids, people feel very sorry for you. Like, that's considered like a, not a, I don't want to say a curse, but that's considered like a great sadness in your life. And how different from the United States where, you know, people think they have to have their one boy and one girl and then they're done. You know, I mean, how many times have you been at a party and asked, oh, are you guys done yet? You know, which I just find shockingly rude, but that's just me. But especially if you have more than three kids, people are really surprised.
So I feel that Uju brings this perspective that reminds us that, you know, this is a beautiful thing. And, you know, we might have fear. We might, you know, not know what to do or have support. But it's really the joy of life. And that, you know, these pregnancy help centers like Aid for Women are there for you. And She makes so much sense. I started following her on Twitter, and she's just so brave and courageous.
She doesn't back down to anyone.
Well-spoken.
Right.
And she can take on anybody and talk about this issue in the most effective way. She's bringing back the common sense. And I think she's shaking things up because she's making us really think about, I don't know, she's bringing more common sense language that people that are pro-life, and even if you're not pro-life, you're like, wow, well, okay, that makes sense. She's made a great point.
Well, right, and to talk about it, and to what I love about the way she phrases it, you know, when she talks about what she has termed philanthropic racism, where, you know, you wonderful, rich white people who want to come to my country and then insert IUDs in our women and Norplant in our women, but yet not tell our women about the side effects of these drugs that you're giving us and not telling us about the dangers to us and not telling us that now our family sizes are going to be so limited that we'll be, you know, it's a shameful thing in our communities.
Yeah, I mean, it's like population control, which is just outrageous.
Right, right.
Well, and the UN supports it.
Yep.
And, you know, with President Trump, he doesn't want to support that. Most Americans don't want taxpayer dollars to pay for abortion.
Absolutely.
But
worldwide, right? That's a public function. But, you know, I love, Molly, what you said about Uju is that she is not afraid to tell the truth and to say it firmly and to call people out on what she calls neocolonialism, right? These new colonial thoughts that Americans and other European countries wanting to come in to tell African nations and tell African people what's best for them without asking the people first. Mm-hmm. And we've got a great clip that I'm going to ask our producer, Nick, to pull up now. We've got a great clip of Uju on the BBC. And when she's being interviewed about a new, I believe it was Great Britain had just committed a significant amount of aid in terms of their aid packages. And it was heavily tied. So the aid for water and food and education, et cetera, was very heavily tied to contraceptive use. So if we can play that clip now, it'll give our listeners a better sense of Uju's spirit, but also of, as you mentioned, Molly, the common sense arguments that she makes.
Okay, we can now speak to pro-life campaigner Obianeju Okocha from the Society for the Protection of Unborn Children. She's also the founder and president of Culture of Life Africa. She's in our studio in Birmingham and joins us now. Thank you very much for joining us here on the program. I mean, we just saw Karen's piece there. The fact remains that hundreds of millions of women do not have access to contraception.
Now, in that report that you had just played now, it's kind of confusing because you first of all started talking about HIV and access to contraception. Then you're trying to conflate it with something like the provision of abortion in a place like South Africa, which is one of the few African countries that actually has legal abortion. Just to point out that about 80% of the African countries actually don't have legal abortion. And they don't have legal abortion not because they can't legalize abortion. We all have parliaments. We have governments that can go through the process of legalizing abortion. But actually, an overwhelming majority of the African people continue to reject abortion, even as surveys, you know, I think Pew Research had done a survey a couple of years ago and found out, I mean, in some countries, as high as 90-something percent of the people still continue to reject the idea of legalized abortion. So I don't understand, are we talking about abortion? Are we talking about contraception? They're two different things. If we're talking about abortion, well, I don't think that any Western country has a right to pay for abortions. In an African country, especially where majority of people don't want abortion, then that then becomes a form of ideological colonization, as we're beginning to see it more and
more. But say if we talk about contraception, the fact remains that hundreds of millions of women don't have access and should.
Well, you're saying should, but who are you to decide if you don't mind me saying?
Well, because
there isn't a popular demand, ma'am. There isn't a popular demand. If you go to Africa, what people are asking for every day, because I was born in Africa, I was raised in Africa, I continue to go to Africa many times a year. You just speak to any ordinary woman. I think contraception might be like the 10th thing she says, if that.
But it's a basic human right to have access to it. That's when I say that they should have access. It should be become available for them if they want it.
When
it should be
available.
When there
is no food and there is no water, then if there is
and
only a limited amount of aid.
But it is part of that cycle of poverty and dealing with poverty and overcoming poverty, is it not?
Well, that's kind of a Western solution, isn't it? But if the Africans are brought to the table, and the people are asked, the ordinary people, I'm not speaking about some doctor that works for some Western organization that is planted in Africa. If you speak to the ordinary woman on the streets of Africa, what is she asking for? She's asking for food, she's asking for water, she's asking for basic health care, and contraception continues to be like about the last thing that they would ever think of.
But does
now,
that
talking
not,
about contraception,
does
sorry.
That, but does that not play into the wider conversation about poverty and food? If they have access to contraception, if they can deal with birth control, if they can have a family planning program in place, then it deals with the issues of poverty as
that
well.
That is the Western solution. Why don't you listen to the people first? Now, talking about something like contraception, in all this talk about contraception, the one thing that I have never heard of in all my time trying to track all these things is something like the side effects of contraception. No one ever tells the African women when they come to promote contraception across the different African countries. No one talks about it. Now, recently, I spoke to some women in Africa who had contraception inserted into them. I think it was something like the IUD and the Implanon. And these women were crying. I found myself consoling women who had actually been experiencing in these side effects that they had never heard of before. No one ever told them. But someone from a Western organization, one of these Western organizations in Africa, came and put IUDs into them and told them, this is what you need to come out of poverty. That is not what African women need. That is not the single indicator to come out of poverty. What Africans need is education.
They
it's
do, indeed. It's,
good
it's
governance.
About
these
education
kind of
as well, so that they understand their basic human rights. It's not just about the West coming
rights,
and imposing
you,
something.
According to you, these are colonial thoughts, so you better be careful expressing them. According to whom? So Africans, there are Africans who don't have access to education. What children are looking for is a way to get into school. Someone like myself, I was born in Africa, I was raised in Africa. My lifeline out of poverty was education. It was not contraception. And there are so many other women who have walked the same path as I have without ever having to take recourse to some contraception provided by the British government or the United States government.
So you're you're then also generalizing, speaking on behalf of, you know, every woman on the continent,
well, so
saying that the
you.
Majority of
so
them.
So are you? You're talking about a general solution when Africa is actually not a monolithic
society.
All I'm
saying is that they should have the right to have access to.
Well, they do. We have contraception in Africa. As a matter of fact, a lot of the aid money is being actually redirected to provision of things like contraception.
Well, when the United Nations says that more than 200 million women don't have access to it, you know, then
well,
that's contradicting
what
you're saying.
How many of those people? I am not contradicting them. I'm saying these are the calculations by the United Nations. But how many of those 200 million women are actually asking for it? There is a difference between between what the United Nations now calls the unmet need and the unmet demand, what the African women are actually dying
when we go back to education, perhaps they're unaware.
Well, it's for someone like yourself, you know, someone so kind and generous from the West to come tell them that what they need is contraception to come out of poverty. Now you give them contraception, and the next day they still don't have work. The following year they still don't have work.
I would really love to discuss this further with you. We're just 10 seconds to go off air. So thank you very much for joining.
Thank you very much
for joining us here on the program. Do stay with us. We've got lots more coming.
So that just made me think of one thing.
Yes, Molly.
So Planned Parenthood is now going into public schools and dispensing contraceptions, the birth control pill. And these are teenagers, and teenagers they're not reliable. They don't take their pill every morning. And so contraception then fails, and that's the strategy that Planned Parenthood follows. They have these women that are coming to them, these young women that are coming to them, and then they get pregnant, and, you know, they just want their problem to go away. And so then they go back to Planned Parenthood and have an abortion,
right.
And that's
right.
How Planned Parenthood makes their money.
Well, 50% of women coming into Planned Parenthood to have abortions were using contraception during the month that they became pregnant. And there's a really excellent, you know, last year I was giving a lot of talks on the 50th anniversary of Humana Vitae. And in part of my research in preparing for some of those talks was to look at basically Great Britain's equivalent to Planned Parenthood, the British Pregnancy Advisory Service, BPAS. And the director of BPAS admitted publicly that anyone who says that giving out contraception will reduce abortion rates is lying. She said, because you're not familiar with the failure rates, which are a part of any contraceptive method that you use. There is virtually nothing that doesn't, no method that has some form of failure rate, that doesn't have a form of a failure rate. And therefore, to say that simply by giving girls contraception, this is going to reduce the abortion rate, in fact, it may lead to riskier sexual behavior, because especially teenagers, right, who don't particularly think in a structured way a lot of the time, think, oh, I'm invincible. I'm using contraception. I can't possibly get pregnant. Well, yeah, maybe you can. And in fact, there was a percentage of the women who came into BPAS, the British Pregnancy Advisory Services, for their abortions, who were using two types of contraception simultaneously, and they still got pregnant.
So what really concerns me in the U.S. is that this is a form of manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
Women aren't told the truth. There aren't explained consequences are not explained to them,
right,
with side effects, how it affects them down the road.
And parents are completely kept out of the decision.
Well, the other crazy
thing is the other part of it.
Parents, you know, kids that have acne, you know, you go to your doctor and they encourage you to get on these birth control pills, and then that manipulates your hormones.
Exactly.
They say, oh, it's safe, but it's messing with your body in a way that's not supposed to be messed with.
It's a very strong steroid. There was as part of this other talk I was mentioning that I gave last year, Psychology Today had an excellent piece on the way in which being on hormonal birth control pill will affect your choice of mate.
Yes.
Now, how many girls are told that if you're on the birth control pill, you will choose someone who is more biologically like your father or your brother, rather than someone who's compatible for you? So you are having young women who've been on the pill, say, for years. Say they start because, you know, they get put on it for acne or for irregular menstrual cycles, and they've been on the pill for a while. They meet someone that they think is Mr. Right, but their frenomes are so screwed up because of the fact that their body's mimicking pregnancy. They choose them. They get married. They go off the pill trying to get pregnant, and then all of a sudden, their spouse repulses them.
And
they're not compatible with them physically, so they have difficulty conceiving. They're not compatible with this person biologically. Mm-hmm. It affects the way that they interact with them. I mean, the science on it is, and this is in Psychology Today. This is not in the National Catholic Register, my friends.
And this is not told to young women.
And
I have two daughters,
yep.
And I just sent them a few articles about, you know, some of these issues. And they said to me, Mom, you would not believe every single one of my friends is on birth control. And
it's heartbreaking.
That's manipulation.
Yeah.
That's a form of, you know, control that just is outrageous.
Right.
That can be done,
as you mentioned, can be done without parental knowledge or consent on young women. And they're told that this is the best. And in fact, I think my sense of it, and Chris, I don't know if you want to weigh in here, you've got a daughter as well, is that girls are almost encouraged not to talk to their moms about it.
Sure, and that is the case. When you think that a 14-year-old girl can go to Planned Parenthood and get birth control pills or get an STD test, which, you know, that's the other consequence of young girls that maybe, you know, aren't responsible for themselves, not adults yet, not 18, still on their parents' insurance, and they can go get hormonal contraception, STD testing from Planned Parenthood. And
while their brains are still developing, mind you, and have we seen any longitudinal studies on the impact on the female human brain that's injected or given oral steroids from a young age? I mean,
and I
long-term
have a lot
ramifications of this. Yeah,
right. I have a lot of sympathy for parents because they don't really understand this either. They just they want to protect their daughters from pregnancy. They don't want them to have abortions. And, or terrible effects of acne, but it's just they're not educated about it either. They've been told their entire lives that it's safe.
Right. And, and that's why I love, I think, in so many different ways that we're having Uju Akeocha to our dinner, not only because of, the kind of contraceptive mentality that's so prevalent in the United States, and now we're trying to import it to countries where it really has long been rejected by the people and by the culture, but also because the current kind of pool of Democratic candidates, Bernie Sanders most preeminently, is speaking about Western aid, particularly U.S. aid, being tied to abortion and contraception, and that is going to be the solution to overpopulation and to poverty in developing nations is going to be to, just pummel those people with abortion and contraception.
And the thing that's just so maddening, too, is Planned Parenthood is opening many of their clinics in the poorer neighbors where, poorer neighborhoods where African American and Latinos are. And those are the children that are being aborted.
Well, when we get back from this next break, I want to pivot from there, Molly, to talk a little bit about the horrifying news that came out over the weekend of an Illinois abortion doctor who had three clinics in, guess what, communities? Gary, Fort Wayne, and South Bend, Indiana, in predominantly African-American neighborhoods. And the 2,200 remains of unborn children that were found in his garage over the weekend. So when we get back from the break, we're going to talk a little bit about that and then a little bit more about the Aid for Women dinner and how our listeners can support Aid for Women or come to hear Uju Akeocha, who is not in the United States very often. So take advantage. I think this is her very first time in Chicago ever. So you got to take advantage, listeners, of this opportunity to see Uju Akeocha when she is here for the Aid for Women Gala. But please don't go away. We're going to go to our break. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
This Saturday, January 11th, from 1 to 3 p.m. at Daly Plaza, 50 West Washington Street, Chicago. Work to transform our society from a culture of death to a culture of life. This Saturday, January 11th, starting at 1 at Daly Plaza. Complete information at artschicago.org. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Sometimes in life, we are confronted with the tyranny of choice.
I know. Stop or go. Hot or cold. Up or down. This way or that way. You can contribute to Winds of Change, one way or the other. One way is to go to windsofchangeshow.com. Then click on Support Winds of Change Show in the upper right-hand corner of the page. The other is to go to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to make your donation, one way or the other.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. Thanks for staying with us for this really interesting and very important conversation we're having about current events in the pro-life movement, upcoming special events for the Pregnancy Center and Maternity Home Aid for Women, featuring Nigerian pro-life activist Uju Ekeocha. But Molly, we left the last part of our discussion with you mentioning the racially targeted locations of so many of the abortion clinics. Many, if not most, I believe it's upwards of 80% of abortion clinics are in neighborhoods where predominantly the residents are people of color, whether that's African-American or Hispanic. Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who has been, you know, such a strong defender of what he calls women's reproductive rights, He was very much a champion of one of these three abortion clinics run by this the abortion doctor who just passed away, where the remains of these unborn children were found in his garage. And I just want to read a statement of Pete Buttigieg previously, where he defended this clinic. This is from his National Press Secretary, Chris Maher. The mayor, Mayor Buttigieg, is deeply concerned about what he views as a new and extreme assault on Roe versus Wade in legislatures across the country. He believes that a truly radical idea in this debate around abortion is one of banning abortion outright. The South Bend Clinic, this is one of question, one of the three clinics where this abortion doctor practiced, would be the only one for a radius of several counties. It's a restriction on a woman's right if she is low income or doesn't have a vehicle or if she has to visit multiple times because the clinic is a dozen miles away. Buttigieg ignited a firestorm in South Bend when he vetoed a zoning request by the Women's Care Center, which is a pregnancy resource center that attempted to open next door next to the whole Women's Health of South Bend. So like Aid for Women, we have our clinics are strategically located near abortion clinics so that we can be right there and present to women who are in crisis. But Pete Buttigieg actually vetoed zoning laws that would have allowed a pro-life women's center to really give women options to open next door to that abortion clinic. So, Chris Cortez, I want to ask you, bring you into the conversation now. You've got, not inside information, but you're a local resident and did not live far from where this abortion doctor was from, correct?
Yes. When I saw that he lived in Will County in Illinois, I Googled it, like, I'm wondering where, because I grew up in Creed, Illinois, which is in Will County, and lo and behold, that's the town that he lived in, sadly, only several miles from where I grew up. And it made me wonder, like, why is he living in Illinois if his abortion clinics were in Indiana? It made me wonder whether he is licensed or was licensed to practice in Illinois at all. And I can speak to the fact that Mayor Pete, you know, did not want the competition.
Right.
You know,
well, speak to that, because, you know, abortion clinics are for profit businesses, right? Let's not fool ourselves here. Abby Johnson speaks about this very frankly in both her book and in the movie, that when her abortion numbers started to drop, she was called in by her district manager and said, you've got to get your abortion numbers up. They're really low. And, you know, she thought, well, she questioned her manager and said, but I thought we were about making free choices. And the manager said, we're a business. That, you know, our tax exempt status, that's a tax status. That's not a business model. You need to get your numbers up.
Yes, I think the pro-choice people that I know that are, you know, people that are close to me, friends, most of them of goodwill. I think if we have an honest, sincere conversation to be pro-choice, and they agree that we should offer women a choice. We want to empower them that they can make the best decisions for themselves and their families. And so our Aid for Women newest center in Flossmoor, Illinois, which is in South Cook County, that when Illinois recently passed these more broad, radical abortion laws where our taxpayer dollars are now funding abortion in our state, Planned Parenthood is opening up more clinics, and their new beachhead of expansion is in South Cook County, which is very heavily poor African-American, Hispanic community. And as we all know, the minority community is targeted by Planned Parenthood. And, you know, they have many more abortions disproportionately, statistically. Right. And what we see, and I just had a conversation last week with one of our elected officials in town who definitely supports, I think, Planned Parenthood being there. And I had heard that he might have had some questions about our pregnancy care center being next door. And I said, if we really would like to empower women with choice, don't you think it's a good idea that we actually give them a choice?
Right. And you put those choices side by side,
yes,
correct?
And,
right?
And I said, look, I'm looking at you and your family. I'm looking at me and my family. When families like ours have crises, and we do, whether it's an aged parent who's in hospice living with us, it could be an addiction in the family, it could be an unplanned pregnancy. You know, we gird our loins and we help each other out. But many, many people don't have that same family support structure.
Mm-hmm.
And when a girl is faced with an unplanned pregnancy and she does not have that support structure, oftentimes she may prefer not to have an abortion but feel she has no choice. And so pregnancy care centers like Aid for Women, right next door to Planned Parenthood, is there to offer a choice, to say, let us know what are those hurdles, what are those obstacles in the way to empower you from choosing a better life for you and your family. And let us see if we can help you, without any cost to you, help you remove those barriers,
right,
and those hurdles so that you can continue to go to school, you can continue to work,
right,
for example.
And you know, and again, there's a key point that you raise, with no cost to you, we will never charge you at Aid for Women or any other pregnancy center for any of the help that we give you. Whereas at Planned Parenthood, why is it that they won't, you know, quote unquote, help you unless you can come up with the $300 or the $800, or if you're having a really late term abortion, you know, the $2,500 to $3,000. And you know, there was a horrifying story in the Associated Press last week. I don't know if you read it, where they talked about two women who had late term abortions, one at 28 weeks and one at 26 weeks. One woman had a child that was diagnosed in utero with a fetal anomaly. But the woman who had the abortion at 28 weeks didn't realize she was pregnant until much later in the pregnancy, and had to get family and friends help her scrape together the $3,000 that she needed. She aborted, healthy mom, healthy baby, 28-week abortion. And AP, you know, reported on this as if it was a morally neutral decision. We know, I mean, I have a nephew that was born at 22 weeks, 0 days, who is a healthy and happy toddler today. That's a full 6 weeks past viability. And she aborted that baby, and it was reported on as if it was nothing. And so, you know, just the timing. I spoke up at Wisconsin Right to Life last week. That's why I was up in La Crosse and visiting the memorial to the unborn child that they have at the beautiful Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe. And, you know, we were talking about this story, this AP story, and how horrifying it was. And then just right after that, we have the news of these babies being found. So I just find it so interesting that, mm-hmm, all of this is sort of happening at the same time. Don't you, Molly? It's,
yes.
God's timing is always perfect. And there are coincidences.
Mm-hmm. So the thing that just keeps coming back to me is how diabolical this really is.
Yeah.
You know, the father of lies. I mean, Roe v. Wade was passed based on lies. You know, we find out later that, you know, these, you know, abortion doctors, they lied. They lied to the justices. And
now, I just find that shocking, that an abortion doctor would lie.
Well,
sarcastic.
I mean, women are being lied to,
yes,
and manipulated.
Yes.
And so that, to me, really signifies what's going on.
Cecile
it's the
Richards.
Father of lies, and,
yep,
and people have accepted the lies, and really, I think the only way to keep combating this is, you know, to pray the rosary and to go to adoration.
Yeah. Molly, that's a key thing. We have here at St. Stan's, where we broadcast from, it's the only church in the Archdiocese that is open 24/7 with 24/7 Eucharistic adoration. So if you ever feel, you know, an urge, you want to be with the Lord in the Eucharist, you can always come here to St. Stan's. There's the incredible iconic monstrance that's here in the church, right off the Kennedy Expressway at Division. It is always open for people to come and pray, and has a great sort of, you know, pro-life tradition here of, you know, masses for the unborn being said. Father Anthony has been so helpful in that regard, really wanting this to be not just a center of prayer, but also a center of prayer for the unborn. It's a very big part of the mission of the parish here.
And Mary, you mentioned earlier when we were on the break, so the remains of these unborn babies that were found, there are people that are they want to bury these babies and give them the respect
Correct.
And care that
so right that's one of the corporal works of mercy of the church, right, is to bury the dead. And we have a history here in Chicago. Cardinal Bernardine, I think it was in 1987 we did this. I was pro-life director for him at the time, and there were the remains of 2,500 unborn children that were found in dumpsters up in Northbrook primarily. And Cardinal Bernardine agreed to have a funeral for them at Queen of Heaven. So there's a beautiful little mausoleum to the unborn there. And Cardinal Bernardine presided over the burial of those remains. Burying the dead, you know, you see it in the Book of Tobit and Scripture. You see it throughout the Scripture, the importance of burying the dead, reverencing human remains, not mistreating them. So I know organizations like Citizens for a Pro-Life Society and Rest in His Arms, which is run by my friend Susan Walker, who's been a guest on this show before, are working together to try to secure the remains when they're released. And we don't know when that'll be, because obviously there's going to be an investigation that will be done not only by the medical examiner's office, but likely by the sheriff's office as well. But when the children are available for burial, I don't know if they'll do them all, if they'll bury them all in the same location, or if there may be an attempt to bury some babies in Indiana where they, you know, where they were from, and some here in Illinois. So we'll have to see. But I'll keep you posted, listeners, on that. But thank you for mentioning that, Molly, because that's a critical part of all of this. And it's I mean, it's simply that the racial implications here, the implications just for human dignity are so vast, aren't they, Chris?
Yes. I mean, when I heard this story, I thought, what about all those moms?
Yeah.
I'm guessing they were mortified knowing, you know, looking up, oh my goodness, was he the abortion doctor that did my abortion in Indiana?
Right.
And if so, you know, is my unborn baby in his fridge in formaldehyde?
Well,
how that could stir up all those, you know,
the trauma.
The trauma
of it
all
for
those
women.
Girls. And so many of those girls, I'm sure, if they knew the pregnancy care center was next door to Mayor Pete's place that he vetoed in South Bend, maybe would have considered not having an abortion. They would have considered an adoption, for example, or continuing school with the pregnancy help care center's assistance. And so those moms, it's going to be reliving for them what the trauma many of them have gone through. And so, you know, I think it's important to keep them in our prayers, too, because
right.
this is not going to be easy mm-hmm. for them in the coming weeks.
Well, and especially, you know, Vicki Thorne, who's the founder of Project Rachel, she's, you know, she's done quite a bit of research on this. And, you know, post-abortion trauma doesn't tend to kick in until 5 to 10 years after the abortion's
mm-hmm.
taken place. So, yeah, go ahead, Molly.
So one of the things that made me think of is this new pill that they're trying to get on college campuses, SB 24 in California. I don't know if that's passed or not, but it's incredible. And what people don't understand, what the women, young women don't understand when they take this pill, that triggers the delivery of their baby.
Yeah.
And they go
where you
through
can
that.
Deliver, where you can
right.
deliver at any time, any place.
But you're
by
alone.
Yourself,
you're
and you're alone.
You're generally alone. You see what happens. So that is incredibly traumatizing for them as well.
Yeah.
If you go into a clinic, you know, you don't really see. They don't want you to see.
Well, at Aid for Women, we have one of the women who speaks in our videos who had what they call a, quote, medical abortion as opposed to the surgical abortion. And she passed her child's remains while she was sitting on the toilet.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
well, that's generally what happens.
Yeah. And then she flushed and she said, you know, I'll never, I've seen that video probably a dozen times now. I cry every time I see it when she says, I flushed my own child down the toilet. Do you know what that means for
yeah.
a mom to know that I've done that? I would, you know,
and so these
I'd
women,
have nightmares for years.
Yeah. So
that's, you're absolutely
they're
right,
they're completely traumatized by yeah. that, but they don't realize that
no,
that's what's going to happen.
And the amount of blood you're going to lose. I have a friend who miscarried at 13 weeks, who when we went to see Unplanned together, and she was very, I could tell she was very shaken afterwards. And we got in the car and she said to me, you know, that's exactly what my miscarriage was like. She said, except there was even more blood than that. And that was about the same time Abby Johnson, I think it was 12, she was just under the 12-week cutoff for the pill abortion. And she said, that is not an exaggeration. She said, it's like, she said, my bathroom looked like a horror film scene.
I think, too, that, and I know Aid for Women can attest to this, that over half the women that come to us have already had a previous abortion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they might put that experience in a box, and now they're pregnant again, and all of those emotions come back, and what do I do? And to think that a girl is taking these abortion pills in her own apartment by herself, I mean, is this really human dignity?
Right.
For the girl,
right.
And is this really empowering women? I think.
How does that benefit that
yes,
young girl?
Yes, and you know, everybody wants to have a quote unquote conversation. Well, let's have a real conversation about what are all the risks. You know, is this how we really want to treat women? And I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you know what? Well, and just to go back quickly to the, you made me think of another point, Chris. Do you remember when the movie Gosnell came out and when Gosnell was convicted of the three counts of murder? And the response from the abortion industry was, you know, he's an aberration. This is a one-off. This does not happen because Gosnell did is he would snip the feet off of the babies and he had them in jars all over his clinic. I mean, and this is not hyperbole, listeners. If you don't believe me, just Google Gosnell grand jury report and read the independent report of the grand jury. It is worse than any horror movie you could ever imagine, but it was the truth. And he had babies in plastic jugs and in milk cartons and horrifying stuff. But everybody said, oh, no, that is just absolutely not. That's atypical. He was a monster, and we condemn what he did. Well, mm-hmm. Here we go. And here
and
we have it
again. And the press didn't want to cover that.
Oh, my goodness. You're absolutely right. That's one of the, I think, the most striking aspects of that whole trial, of his criminal trial, was when somebody from, it was USA Today, it was Kristen, turned around
yes.
and tweeted out a picture, even though she wasn't supposed to. She brought her camera or film, or sorry, her phone camera in and tweeted out a picture of the empty press box at Kermit Gosnell's trial. And that shamed them into coming and covering the trial, even forcing like the Washington Post to apologize, if I recall correctly. So the lack, and you wonder now, at least this is getting some, you know, a little bit of attention. I saw it in the Washington Post. I saw it in the New York Times. So, you know, it is getting some coverage nationally, but it's going to be interesting to see if that coverage continues or if this story, you know, gets sort of ignored as the Gosnell trial did.
Yeah.
So, well, let's just go in the remaining time that we have. We've got 3 minutes left. I'd like to just go back briefly to Uju Ekeocha, the Aid for Women dinner. Molly, talk just a little bit about tell listeners who've never been to the Aid for Women dinner how wonderful it is and how much they'll enjoy going. It's such an investment. It's one evening. You know how sometimes you have to go to these fundraisers and
yes.
you ladies go to a lot of them. This is really an evening where you could sit at any table with no one you knew and have 9 best friends by the time you left the dinner. That's one of the aspects of this I love.
Well, one of the things is, you know, it's always educational. We always have really amazing speakers, and it's also a night of joy because you're honoring someone that's really fought the fight and given their lives to defend life.
Right. And again, we have Uju Ekeocha as the keynote speaker, and tell us again about the Presidium Vitae, the Defender of Life Award recipients.
Right. So that's David B. Wright, who started 40 Days for Life.
Which is a national event now.
Yes.
You know, it's amazing how that, how influential that particular event is now.
And he's incredibly humble, and his wife has been working alongside him every step of the way, making all the sacrifices and taking care of her family. But he was really inspired to do this. His heart was moved to do this, and he's really devoted his whole life to this, and also to the preservation of and support of marriage and family.
Right.
And I think a lot of times what happens is, you know, these young women, as you were saying earlier, they don't have the support of family mm-hmm. and the breakdown of the family. That's a
terrible
thing.
Yeah, that's key. So to get tickets for the event, you go to www.helpaidforwomen.org.
Yes.
That's
yes.
correct. And there's still some tickets, not a lot, I understand. We're close to selling out. So listeners, if you want to go to this incredible dinner featuring Uju Ekeocha and Margaret and David B. Wright, please go to www.helpaidforwomen.org. My thanks to Molly Perry and to Chris Cortez. We could have talked for another hour, and I think not even continued to scratch the surface of this incredible issue. So thanks again for being with us. Keep what Father Anthony you in your prayers. This has been Mary Fiorito no sitting in on Winds of Change, AM 750 WNDZ. Goodbye, and God bless you. Fence, can you see?